This podcast is sponsored by Sophie Reaptress. If you have been caving and have been envious of those folks in your party that have suits on, as I have been in the past before I got my own suit, and maybe you want something a little better than what they've got, maybe a little more customized, maybe something with a bat stencil on it. Sophie Reaptress is a small one-person business based in Philadelphia. She started making leggings, and she expanded from there. And when she started caving, she was looking for suits. She makes them with 500 denier cordura, twice as thick where it counts, elbows, knees, makes them in a lot of different colors. A lot of the other cave suits come in two or three colors. Goes from basic suits to extra pockets, inside pockets, knee pad pockets. You can customize it however you want. Everything is made to order just for you. Get your own custom cave suit made for you by Sophie Reaptress. You can find her on Instagram at Sophie Reaptress, and her website is sophiereaptress.com, and I've got the link in the description of this podcast. Sophie Reaptress, get a cave suit for your adventures. sophiereaptress.com. Welcome to the Caving Podcast. My name is Matt Pelser of the Central Indiana Grotto. Caving, cave exploration, or just, you know, tourist cave trips. If you are interested in something like that, you're in the right place. Welcome, welcome, welcome. If you have tried to get into caving and found it to be a little secretive, there are reasons for that. And I know that it can be a little off-putting, and our apologies on behalf of the entire caving community, because, you know, some people are a little secretive, a little protective. But you know what? There, like I said, the reason for that is that we want to protect the resource. We want to protect the caves. We only want people in the caves who know how to protect it. There was a good example in Indiana just this past weekend of some amateurs going into a cave. And they took their GoPros with them, and we don't know which cave. We don't know who they are. We're trying to track them down. But you can clearly see on the video, they were breaking formations. And not on purpose, but they just weren't being careful enough. And that is exactly the kind of thing we're trying to avoid. We want to protect caves. We want you to be able to access them, visit them, but we also need you to know that these are special places for us. And we want them to be special places to everybody who goes in. We only want people who are going to be careful. And so if you want to go, we insist that you be careful and know what you're doing. So join a grotto, or at the very least, talk to some local grotto members. Get them to take you. They'll explain the safety protocols, all of those things, because we want you to be able to go if you really want to go, but we also need to make sure that we protect these places that we love so much. And the best way to do that is to join your local grotto. You can find your local grotto through the National Speleological Society, which is our national organization. And I'll link you to the page that helps you find your local grotto. It's in the description of this podcast right now. So if you want, you can go and check that out. I'm going to try to make this intro brief because, and I say that every month, don't I? Because this is you might have noticed this is a good long interview, which I love. I love that Sean Williams shared so much of his caving life. So hang on, I've just got a couple announcements to make. First of all, Sarah Cave Carnival. I'm coming this weekend. I'll be there probably Thursday afternoon. I think I'm going to make it down. And I'll be there to interview cavers. Maybe if you're going to be there and you've got enough to talk about, we'll do an interview. It doesn't have to be a full hour, but I'd love to do several full hour interviews on site at Sarah. I'd love to do an interview in the hot tub. That'd be fun. That'd be a cool thing to be able to say I did. I also hope to get some caving in. I've been invited on a couple of trips. I really appreciate it. I'm trying to find the right one. I also, you know, I want to make sure I get these interviews in, but I also want to get some good caving in. What do I want to do? Well, I would really just love to bounce at least one big pit down there. At least one. Some cool photo ops would be great. I would love to be able to show people what I did, but I want to be able to bounce one good pit. I'm going to bring all the gear, though. I'm going to bring all my vertical. I'm going to bring a wetsuit. I would like to get one good trip in. But the rest of the time, it's going to be partying and interviewing at Sarah. So I'll see you there. And thank you to everyone who's helping me get out there. Also, an event that I went to 2 years ago that unfortunately I won't be able to make this year is happening at the end of this month, Speleo Fest. Man, I wish I could go to Speleo Fest this year. It sounds like it's going to be so great. Dean Wiseman, who's been on this podcast, good friend of mine, he is going to be speaking at Speleo Fest. I don't know what he's going to talk about. He's probably going to talk about Vietnam. He went back to Vietnam. He's been there a few times now. It's going to be a great presentation, and SpeleoFest is such a great time. I'll put a link to the SpeleoFest website in the description of this podcast so that you can register there or at least check it out. I highly encourage you to go to Kentucky for SpeleoFest at the end of this month, Memorial Day weekend. Another announcement, Indiana Cave Capers, first weekend in August. Would love it if you came there, because that's the event I never miss. That's my grotto's event from the Central Indiana Grotto. We put that one on every year, and Capers is going to be great this year. I'm going to host the banquet and the door prizes. Probably going to donate a couple things for the door prizes this year, and they'll be big. So I'd love to see you at Indiana Cave Capers this year. If I can find a link to our pre-registration, if it's up, it might not be up yet. I'll put that in the description of this podcast as well. I had told you a couple months ago that I had noticed that I had let my membership lapse to my local grotto. I finally paid that up, and I paid extra. I paid, I don't know, paid like 8 years ahead, which you can do. You can talk to the treasurer of your grotto and be like, hey, I'm going to give you a bunch of money. I want it to go toward dues for the next 10 years, whatever it is, because dues are cheap. And so if you got $150 and your dues are $15 a year, just pay $150 and you're good to go. And your grotto can use that extra money toward, you know, whatever your grotto does. So highly encourage you to do that. So come to Sierra, come to SpeleoFest, come to Capers. And if your grotto is putting on an event that you'd like for me to mention on the podcast, please, please let me know. I'm in the directory, the NSS directory, or you can email me at alpineproductions@gmail.com. Sean Williams, Missouri Caver. He has led an extraordinary life. Really, truly extraordinary. And this was such a great conversation. Also, great communicator, Sean. Barely had to do any editing at all on this thing, which is really special and makes my job easy, especially for a long interview, you know what I mean? Which this was, and I'm thankful for that. Here is my talk with Sean Williams. So, I mean, let's start at the beginning. Why not? Right? When was the first cave?
My first cave was Marvel Cave, which is located in a theme park called Silver Dollar City, which is in Branson, Missouri.
So wait, this is a real cave, right?
This is a real cave.
Okay, and you said theme park. I'm like, they didn't like artificially make this, did they?
It is a natural cave that is in the boundaries of the theme park, has been for a long time. I don't know the exact dates of when it began its life as a tourist cave, but it's been quite a long time. And I was about 9 years old, living in Minnesota at the time, and my parents discovered Eureka Springs, Arkansas, through a magazine, I believe, a travel article in a magazine. So we would make treks from Burnsville, Minnesota, down to Eureka Springs on a regular basis. And at some point, we stopped in Branson and went to the Shepherd of the Hills, is another name for the Silver Dollar City theme park, and took a tour of Marvel Cave. And for those who have never been there, the entrance of the cave is called the Cathedral Room, and it is 204 feet high, 225 feet wide, and 411 feet long. And the entrance to the cave is through a sinkhole, which is 94 feet deep. And if you Google it and you see the pictures of it, there's a giant staircase that goes from the bottom of the sinkhole to the top of the debris pile. And at 9 years old, having never been in a cave before, I was absolutely blown away. And I was born a caver, but I didn't know it until that moment when I was 9 years old and I was bitten, and I have not been able, nor have I desired, to shake it since.
I just Googled. Yeah, that's impressive pictures and real old school looking for, like, you know, show cave type stuff,
yes.
You know?
Yes. And if you dig deeper, they have had hot air balloons in the entrance room. I believe I read that they used to have dances down there.
Probably.
Yes. So it has a long history, and the owners of the park are very conservation minded. So they take as good of care as the cave as possible. You know, they did have to blast a separate entrance and put an elevator in. So there has been a lot of augmentation, but it's still a spectacular place in a questionably spectacular town, aka Branson, Missouri. And I believe it's in Stone County, Missouri, which has a huge amount of caves in it. And I've done a lot of ridge walking and mapping and surveying in Stone County, Missouri. So pretty well tied to it.
You say questionably spectacular just because of the sort of overwhelming tourist presence, right? Or is there something else to it?
Branson is a love-hate thing. it is a tourist trap. A lot of country music shows, a lot of kitschy comedy shows, family entertainment venues, etc. And the traffic is horrendous, and there's been a lot of urban sprawl, so it's not, I don't think it's the best laid plans, but it is what it is. You either love it or hate it.
Yeah, totally get that. I've been there myself. I enjoyed it, but I could see how those at a closer proximity might have a love-hate relationship for sure. Right. Didn't do any caving around there, though, so it was cool to hear about that. So, I mean, when you get started that early, the why as to why the cave bug bit you is a little harder to understand, I would imagine. Have you given that any thought as to why this is sort of an attractive experience to you?
I don't know. I mean, kind of like Branson, you either get it or you don't, you know?
That's the perfect, you know, answer.
when you bring up Branson, Missouri, some people will go, "Oh my gosh, I love Branson," and other people will go,
and then you know how to respond in kind afterward.
Exactly. And some people will go, "Branson, ew." Same thing with caving, you know, it's like you either get it or you don't. Some people, when I tell them I'm a caver, they're like, "Oh my gosh, that's so cool. Tell me all about it." And other people are like, "Why?"
Yeah. Mostly it's that.
I got bit and I've enjoyed the bite ever since immensely.
All right. So, I mean, that was age 9. You don't have a ton of freedom at age 9. And so, like, how much were you able to do after that?
Not much. There aren't many caves in Minnesota.
Nuh-uh.
So
there are a few, though.
There are a few, but I didn't know anything about them then. And, you know, I was 9, and then, you know, you get into the teenage, prepubescent and pubescent years. So fast forward to age 13, which is not too far along in the chronology of it, my dad got a job in St. Louis. So in 1981, we moved to St. Louis. Had never been to St. Louis before, had no clue, didn't know at the time that there were lots of caves in the area and in the state and in the region. And unfortunately, I kind of strayed on the wrong path after moving down here, fell in with the wrong crowd, you know.
Teen angst, having to move, I get it.
Teen angst, yeah, move, dealing with another thing that I didn't know what it was, which we'll touch on later. So I fell into the wrong crowd, started doing hoodlum things, hooligan things. I was a bad kid. I eventually ended up in the juvenile court system.
Oh, man.
Because I got caught doing some of the stupid things that I was doing.
Yeah.
And I was referred to an entity called the Progressive Youth Center, which was PYC. They took at-risk youth and took them on adventures that they may not otherwise have a chance to do as a way to expand their horizons and also try to keep them out of trouble. We would go on urban adventures. We would go like into the city, and we actually went there's a train tunnel that runs underneath the city of St. Louis, which is now the Metrolink light rail system. But at the time, that wasn't there. So we went in one end of this miles long train tunnel and came out the other side, which was kind of like caving in a way.
Yeah, a little bit.
Urban caving. The police were waiting for us on the other side because we didn't have permission to be in there, but got kind of reinvigorated with that. And also PYC would take us on float trips. Missouri is a wonderful place to go canoeing and kayaking and floating. So we would go on canoe trips on some of the rivers, and most of the rivers in southern Missouri have caves along them.
Yeah. But first of all, can I just say how curious it is that the police were waiting on the other end of a PYC, basically group of juvies?
that is good. You got the joke, because the officers who were there waiting for us interviewed all of us. You know, I'm 13 and teenage angst, anti-authority, so I did not have a pleasant experience with the police that day, nor did the organizers, the counselors that were leading this trip. The police were like, "What were you thinking? There are homeless people that live in there. There are probably drug addicts that are doing their drugs in there, this and that and that." And we're like, "Well, we didn't see anybody. We didn't see a thing."
Yeah.
So after quite a long time of interrogation and finger wagging, we were released and let go. Nobody went to, I don't think anybody went to jail. It was a long time ago. Maybe somebody went to jail. I don't remember, but it wasn't me.
Not you.
Correct.
So then paddling and checking out caves along the river.
Reinvigorated that spark in me. And really started getting into it quite a bit, you know, 14, 15. And I was not cured by the Progressive Youth Center because I continued to be a troublemaker.
Mm.
So when I was 15, my parents said, "You, son, are going to military school."
Oh, goodness. All right. The last resort.
And I said, "Oh, no, I am not." So it finally sunk in, and I came to the realization that, you know what, that's probably the best thing that I can do right now is go to military school.
Yeah.
Which I did for a year and a half, and I was, I'm a musician. I play the drums. I play the guitar. I was in three bands at Missouri Military School. It was regimented. I got really good grades. I did really well. But again, I fell into the kind of the party crowd at military school. And one day we decided to drink a bunch of beer during the day.
Uh-oh.
Early days of my day drinking career. And I was on the drum squad. So there would be a drum squad that would escort all of the buildings, the companies, to lunch and dinner and breakfast. So I was drumming drunk on the way to dinner, and I was reprimanded, and I had to take a urine test, and I was kicked out of military school for drinking alcohol.
Oh, good heavens. Well, I bet that didn't go over well with the folks.
Hell no. So fast forward, I then was placed in St. John's Preparatory School in Collegeville, Minnesota, which is just north of St. Cloud, right in the center of Minnesota, where there are no caves.
Mm.
And again, I did well. I got really good grades. You know, all was well, but I fell into the party crowd again. And we had talked earlier about all of these almost near-death experiences. And when I was a senior in high school at St. John's Prep, I had my first near-death experience because I overdosed on alcohol.
Oh, my gosh.
My blood alcohol content was like 0.48, which is above what it should be after you're dead.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's high.
That's high. That's lethal. I should not have survived that. Obviously, I did. I did graduate from St. John's Prep. They did not kick me out. They had the sense to send me to drug and alcohol treatment. So all was well there. Came back to St. Louis, and at some point, I enrolled in Merrimack Community College. This was probably 1987. My major was going to be wildlife management, and my minor was going to be geology. So I was turned on to caving again by my geology instructor who was...
Can I go back to Merrimack? That's a familiar word in the cave world.
It is. Yeah. It is.
So is it the same Merrimack, essentially?
Well, Merrimack, there's a lot of Merrimacks in the area. There's Merrimack Street. There's Merrimack Community College. There's the Merrimack River. There's probably more. That's the three that I can think of. Merrimack Caverns.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yes, so, where I was getting.
Yes. Merrimack does play a big part in caving and St. Louis and Missouri, actually. I'm pretty sure it is a Native American tribe. Merrimack Community College, Dr. Stinchcomb. He's still to this day, a pretty well-known paleontologist. He has a Facebook page called The Precambrian, I think.
Ooh.
So, and he also lived in Oakville, Missouri, which is south of St. Louis on a sinkhole plain. And he actually had a cave in his backyard.
There you go.
Which was cool. So, yeah. So I let him know that I was.
Was there any fossil significance in that cave? Like, is it a little on the nose that he owned that cave?
I don't know. I mean, we're in the St. Louis limestone here, and there are fossils, but his was more of a pit cave, and he spent years and years digging and digging and digging and never got anywhere.
Hmm.
Eventually sold the house, and I've lost touch with him, but he referred me to a gentleman named Adam Marty, and a lot of people in the Missouri and Ozark caving community would know Adam Marty. He was real prolific in mapping and surveying and cartography in the late 80s, early 90s, then kind of went off grid. I don't know if he's caving much anymore, but he and I became pals real quick and started hitting a lot of the caves down in Oakville, Missouri, which some are pretty small. Some are quite large. Cliff Cave is one, which is now a county park, Cliff Cave Park. He mapped that one. I don't think I was part of that. There's also a large multi-mile cave system called Cave of the Falls Cave, which is pretty much sealed now and underneath a subdivision, as are many, many of the caves there. Wishing Well Cave comes to mind. It's underneath a house right now, completely covered up, completely obliterated.
Man.
So, yeah. So Adam and I hit it heavy for many years, mostly local, some in the Ozarks, but we did a lot in St. Louis, South St. Louis County, along the Telegraph Road corridor there.
And so when you say you did a lot, were you exploring? Were you just kind of visiting? Were you going to known caves? Did you have maps? Would you say you were spelunking?
I would say we were caving by that time.
Okay.
Yeah, we weren't spelunking. Because Adam had been at it for a long time. So any ropes that I would have needed to learn, he would have instructed me real quick.
So you were doing vertical and stuff too.
At that point, I was not. I didn't get into vertical until much later.
Mm.
Only vertical that I remember doing back then was in a Cave of the Falls Cave on a cable ladder that was in the waterfall room. So you're going down this cable ladder with a cold waterfall falling on you. So that was about the only vertical that I remember doing back then.
That's some hardy vertical.
yes. In that same general timeline, I would say late 80s, probably early 90s, I joined a St. Louis grotto called the Middle Mississippi Valley Grotto.
Okay.
Which is known as MMV for short. And
still active, right? Big time?
Yes. Yeah. MMV is active, and that leads into the one of the Ozark region's gods of caving, which is Tex Yoakum. He's a very, very well-known pioneer, especially in Perry County and Perryville, especially in the Moore Cave system. So I kind of started really getting down and dirty with Tex Yoakum down in Perryville and in Barone Moore Cave. Mark Brooks, whose nickname is Fish, did a lot of caving with Mark and Tex, and Mark and I lost contact for decades, and then found ourselves on Facebook and friends again. So
talk about a love-hate relationship.
Yeah, it's good to, well, it, you know, we used it, it was used for what it was for, reconnecting and staying connected with certain people. So
yeah, there's just side effects.
It was a good thing. There are side effects. Yes. Mark Oliver was another one. He's deceased, but he was one that was hitting it hard. So if you mention anything about the Barone Moore and Tom Moore cave system in Perryville, there will be very few regional cavers who wouldn't know what that is. It's actually now an underground nature preserve. It's the Hoff, H-O-F-F, underground nature preserve. So it's amazing. It's now the second longest cave. No, first longest cave? It is the longest cave in Missouri at 25 miles.
Oh, man. And and still, like, there's still frontiers, as I understand it.
Yes, there are still leads and still virgin cave to be found. Just this past weekend, while I was at Mammoth in Kentucky, there was a Mike Young dive. I don't know if you're familiar with Mike Young, the cave diver.
Yeah.
He has been trying to connect Barone Moore Cave with an adjacent cave, Dorothy Taylor Cave. It's connected hydrologically, but nobody's been able to physically connect it. And originally, the survey team thought that it was maybe 300, 400 feet between the connections. Last weekend, Mike tapped out at 800 something feet. So there's more questions now than there are answers. He had to turn around because he was running out of air and didn't have enough time. So he did not connect it yet. And it's going in a direction that wasn't expected. So Chad McCain and Mark Brooks and company have a lot of questions now where we thought we were going to get an answer last weekend. I think that was the third dive attempt, and now there's hopefully a fourth dive attempt, and that will bring Barone Moore Cave to 27 miles, I think, because Dorothy Taylor is, I believe, 2 miles.
Wow. So,
that's exciting.
That's a big cave.
It's a big cave, and it is also a love-hate relationship. To get back to where the dive was is a ball-busting trip, and only the strong survive that. Only the A-listers and or the strong but ignorant young ones are asked to go on that trip, because it is a ball busting trip.
Well, and you're talking about hauling dive gear and stuff back there too. I mean, you're not just going there, which I'm sure is challenging enough as it is, but if you're bringing all that gear so that he can dive 800 feet and then turn around, my goodness.
Exactly. They are called Sherpas. We do call them Sherpas. And the staging area where the dive takes place is about 2.5 feet high by maybe, you know, like 6 or 8 feet wide. No, so there's this dive team, support team, just waiting, you know, contorted in this. There's pictures on Facebook, you know, and they're just all sitting there kind of contorted, waiting for Mike to finish his dive. And it's it's amazing.
I mean, I think of a similar place in Indiana where we haven't brought back dive gear, but where someone probably should at some point, but it would be just such an effort to go all the way up to the north of Sullivan Cave, where there's this, you know, kind of medium-sized room in this giant sump where the cave essentially ends, but we know there's more back there. But there's room to, like, hang out, stand up, stretch, and things like that. I can't imagine going all that way and then waiting around with all the gear and then waiting around in a cramped space for the guy with the dive gear to come back out.
It is for the hardy only.
Yeah.
MMV was my first grotto that I joined. When I went from Merrimack to my next college experience, which was Northwest Missouri State University, where I was going to continue my wildlife management major and geology minor. So not many caves up in Northwest Missouri. None that I know of.
No.
So I kind of got out of caving for that period of time too. That was about the time I was like, you know, 18, 19, and finally figured out that I was not only born a caver, but I was also born a stonewall caver.
Ah, and okay.
For those of you who don't know what that is, it involves rainbow flags and, you know, alternate lifestyles, whatever.
Sure. Well, if you want to call it that, it's kind of more mainstream now, but at the time it probably wasn't.
Right. So, you know, I was born this way, but I just didn't know it until I went to Northwest Missouri State University and started exploring all of that. And I actually quit college. I quit Northwest Missouri State in about 88 to come out and came back to St. Louis and became somewhat of a club kid, believe it or not. started going out and clubbing big time and, you know, dancing the night away, a lot of drinking, a lot of extracurricular activities.
And that's the age for it, I suppose.
Bad relationship choices. I was in the hospitality business. I was a waiter, next to no weekends off.
Oh yeah.
So my caving career took a hiatus basically because I got distracted and I didn't have a lot of time to go caving. So that lasted for a little while. Finally, in 1991, after my dad had retired and mom and he moved down to Eureka Springs. So in 1991, I followed suit because I was in a really toxic relationship. Again, kind of like the military school thing. It was like, you know, this is probably the best thing for me. I should remove myself from the situation. And so I moved down to Eureka Springs, lots of caves around there. So kind of sort of got back into a little bit, you know, did the tour caves there. Wasn't really project caving much. My life plan got a little bit derailed, and that's going to be near-death experience number two. And some of my caver family knows about this. Some of them don't, but they're all going to find out now that in 1991, I was diagnosed with HIV. So,
oh my goodness.
Yes. At that time, as everybody knows, it wasn't if you were going to die, but, you know, when you were going to die.
Yeah. 91.
They said you could last a year. You can last 10 years. We have no idea. Here's some AZT. Good luck. You know,
oh my gosh.
And that's what it was. So I partied like a rock star for the better part of the next decade because
you
honestly,
thought you were going to die.
I thought I was dying. So why not party like a rock star? Because I don't know how long I'm going to be able to party like a rock star.
Oh,
instead of taking care of myself. Yeah. Instead of taking care of myself, I went the other direction.
Well, you can go in a few different directions, though. I mean, OK, so you went that direction. You were young. You know, you didn't know the healthier route, maybe per se. Have you since then, and we'll get back to caving and maybe we'll tie it into caving, but have you since then sort of thought, has that in the retrospect given you a sort of new lease on life? And along
definitely.
With the other near-death experiences that we'll get to.
Definitely, definitely. It was, of course, devastating, and there's absolutely no way to explain the psychological trauma and everything that goes with a diagnosis of death, basically.
Yeah.
So I was in the hospitality business again. I was working at restaurants in Eureka Springs, making cash money in pocket every day and going out every night and
spending
like a rock star.
Yeah.
Yep. Found a new partner down there. So that, you know, seemed to go well for a while. Fast forward to 1994, I decided that I might as well expand my horizons a little bit because I don't know how far my horizon's going to reach. So I moved to Las Vegas. Why not?
To continue the hospitality work because you can make a little more money doing it there?
Partly that, and just, you know, I wanted to get in as much as I could while I could because
okay, party central.
Did not know how long I was going to last.
Okay, so. Now, all right. I know that there are caves in Nevada and that sort of area, but I mean, proximity to Las Vegas, are we still talking caving?
Nope.
No
caving going on at all.
None at all.
Still partying like a rock star.
All right.
Unfortunately.
No.
So that I worked a lot, made a lot of money. My partner started dipping into meth and
yee.
Okay. I did not. So
good for
that
you.
That ended the relationship. He's actually deceased now from a drug overdose. So I got out of that. In 1995, I moved to San Francisco. And that is when they came out with the new drugs.
Mm, yeah.
So the new regiment of the antiretroviral drugs came out. I went on them immediately as a test period to see how I do on them. Finally moved back to St. Louis, had my friends actually pass a hat around in St. Louis to get a plane ticket for me to come home.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for that.
So we'll get back to coming back to St. Louis.
Yes.
I just have a question about the HIV journey. I mean, so you were diagnosed in 91. And then, you know, you go through this 3-year period where you think you're going to three or four, whatever it is, where you think, all right, well, that's it. I'm going to party. I'm going to work, but I'm going to party. Did you see symptoms that started taking you down, or was the diet, did you just remain HIV positive? And that was as far as it went for you. And you just got lucky.
I got lucky. I have always been asymptomatic.
Really? Wow.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I'm lucky. I'm extremely lucky. The worst part of it was those original antiretroviral drugs. The side effects were pretty hellacious.
Yeah.
But I figured if these are going to keep me alive, I'm going to stick with it through the long haul. And here I am.
Yeah, indeed. So you're back
very healthy. So I'm back in St. Louis.
Yeah.
Where I had a lot of friends. Housing is affordable because San Francisco is outrageously expensive as far as rent goes.
Worse now.
Yes, yes. And of course, back in the Ozarks. So I love the Ozarks. And we'll fast forward. I did not resume the caving thing. I kind of just tried to stabilize myself a little bit and clean my act up a little bit and, you know, behave and live life a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2001, I got a job at REI. REI opened up a store in St. Louis.
There you go.
So it was great. You know, we helped prep the store. I was there opening day. Loved my job. It was great. I was the resident caver in the store and made a lot of really good friends. During that time, one of our managers was caretaker of a property down in southern Missouri along a river down in a valley. It was absolutely beautiful. We called it paradise. It's private land, had to have a key to the gate to get in. Near-death experience number 3 happened down at paradise. We were camping, you know, and I was going to go to bed. I'm like, all right, y'all, I'm done going to bed. And talk me into staying. So we're sitting there around the campfire and it wasn't storming or raining heavily or anything. And all of a sudden we heard what almost sounded like a herd of deer running through the forest or herd of something, just kind of this whoosh, very strange sound. And all of a sudden this gigantic sycamore that was in the middle of the camp, I'm talking giant sycamore, slowly tipped over and fell. it fell in between two of the people that were sitting around the circle. I think there were seven of us there.
Oh my God.
And half of it fell on my tent. Had I been in my tent, depending on where I was situated in my two-person tent, I either would have been completely smashed, instant death, or I would have been halved had I been in the middle, probably almost instant death.
Oh my God.
Had I been on the very left side of my tent, I probably would have been battered and bruised and a concussion, who knows what. So
what was it like, straight line winds? What was it?
I guess we were way down in a valley. So we, to this day, my friend and I, who still talk about it, I was just in Florida 2 weeks ago visiting her, and we still talk about it and how traumatizing
it was. How can you not?
And right. So near death experience number three. There's also a cave down there that I'm getting ready to map with Mick Sutton, hopefully. I don't know if you've heard Mick Sutton's name, Dr. Mick Sutton, but he's a real, real well-known biologist, cave biologist here in the Ozarks, and a super cool guy.
That's exciting.
Another thing that happened at REI was I met a gentleman named John Roth, and at the time he was the president of the Ozark Trail Association. I don't know if you're familiar with the Ozark Trail, but it's a very, very long, extensive hiking trail in Missouri, just under 300 miles. We're getting real close to connecting it to the Ozark Highlands Trail in Arkansas. So once we connect those, we're going to have a top-tier, world-class hiking trail.
Nice.
So I got involved in the Ozark Trail through John Roth because he mentioned that he had property down in Crawford County, Missouri. Now, Crawford County, Missouri is very well known for large caves too. Onondaga Cave, I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Yeah.
That is in Crawford County. That lots and lots of caves down there. So, of course, I asked him first thing, do you have a cave on your property by chance? And he said, well, yes, I do. And, of course, I came buddy-buddy with him.
I do have a question before we get back to John. I have a question about working at REI.
Yes.
Whenever I would go to, because our REI, I think in Indy, opened in 2011 or maybe early 2012, and that was like 2 years into my caving life, and I already had pretty much everything I needed, but there was a time when I went there and I just, you know, I wanted to find somebody who was into caving or see if there might be anyone there who, you know, I could talk to who I hadn't, you know, met yet or whatever. And nobody at my REI has ever been caving, or at least it seems like it. And I haven't been there a ton of times because I now prefer a locally owned store in a different area of town. So I don't really go to REI anymore. But when I would go, it seemed like very few people knew anything about caving. But you were a guy at REI who knew about caving. What kinds of questions were you asked, or were you asked often enough to even remember what you might have been asked about caving?
Do you go caving at night? Seriously. Another one is, do you go caving in the wintertime? I would just get asked, you know, a lot of the, what's the best helmet that I should use for this? What's the best light that I should use for this? What's the best clothing that I can buy here at REI? What's the best footwear that I could use? You know, just the common sense stuff.
Yeah.
To which, of course, I would tell them, well, helmet and lighting are probably your two top priorities, because you want to make sure that your helmet is correct, the right fit, that it has padding on the inside in case, you know, God forbid you're flat rocked or something, which has happened. You know, people have rocks fall on top of their heads all the time, and the better your helmet is, the more likely you are to come through unscathed. And as far as lighting goes, you know, you don't want to buy a low tier light, especially for your helmet light, maybe for your backup light, as all cavers should know. So I would just basically make sure that they had a really good or pretty good helmet light and a really good or pretty good helmet. And as far as clothing goes, I would always tell them, you know what, go to a garage sale and find some Polypro and some wool stuff that you can buy for 50 cents, a dollar, because they're going to get trashed.
Yeah.
don't spend a lot of money here at REI on clothing because it's going to get trashed. So sorry, REI, but
they're fine. You know, as you know.
The same with footwear. I would tell them, you know, go to an Army Surplus and buy a pair of combat boots. Don't spend $300 on a pair of boots here to go caving with. They're going to get trashed.
What I always say is retire old hiking boots. Like if you got old hiking boots and you're going to get new ones, the old ones become caving boots.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And at the time I had not discovered wellies for caving, you know, the muck boots.
Yeah.
But now I swear by those. I've been caving exclusively in wellies for well over a decade now. And I love them. Wouldn't go back to anything, but.
Welly over a decade.
Welly over a decade.
Did you find yourself preaching protocols though to maybe people who you thought, you know, may have just have an interest in caving but didn't really necessarily know about organized caving and might not be going about it the right way?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Same thing we do today. You know, if you want to get into caving, here's what you need as far as equipment goes. And I would highly suggest that you join a local grotto and go on a couple trips. Make sure that this is really what you want to get into, and make sure that whoever this grotto that you join are okay with you pursuing this, because some people get into it and it's just like, you know, as a grotto, we've taken you on two or three trips and we're not signing off on you for this or that or whatever. Mm-hmm. So Missouri, I don't know about Indiana because unfortunately I've never been caving in Indiana, but I will soon. Missouri is real protective of our caves. And if you don't get accepted into the Missouri caving community, then there's, you know, obviously a reason for that. So we always say go through the right channels.
When are you coming to Indiana? You got a specific thing planned?
I don't yet, but Kirsten Alvey is, you know, pulling my strings to try to get me there. And,
nice. Where's she going to go? Do some bad stuff, I guess?
I don't know. She just got back from there, so we're going to have to reconnoiter and figure something out. But I drive through there a lot, but I'm always on my way to, you know, Indy or something to see a concert or something, and I never have time to stop. So I have no excuse, really.
Well, next time you're in town, hit me up. We'll do something. I don't know, man.
I shall. Thank you.
Yeah. So anyway,
John Roth. Yes. At the time that I was working at REI, I was caving a lot with Ben Miller. Ben Miller is very, very well known in the Ozark caving community, and he actually lives in Nashville now. He's a pretty famous hydrologist, working on the Roaring River project, which is now the deepest spring in the world, maybe.
Whoa.
What? Yes. Wow. Yes. Yeah. Mike Young has been doing that dive too. So Ben and I were running buddies at the time. We did a lot of caving, a lot of surveying. I've spent hundreds, maybe even thousands of hours underground with Ben Miller. One of the greatest guys you'll ever meet. But anyway, Ben and I ended up mapping John Roth's cave that was on his property. You know, gave him the map. And he was just like, oh my God, that's beautiful. Thank you so much. He was so appreciative and such a great guy. And I started getting involved in the Ozark Trail Association and actually still am to this day. I have my caver family and my Ozark Trail Association family, and it's just great. So John is no longer with us, unfortunately, but that was another catalyst that really got me into the project caving in the Ozarks, you know, hanging out with Ben Miller at the time. And then doing John's cave. So, you know, that's when I really started getting back into it. So I quit REI in 2005. Honestly, just got sick of the retail thing and decided to go back into the hospitality stuff. And that's when I really started getting into the project caving, because I was working for a lot of catering companies. And you can sign up for whatever gig you want with catering companies typically. So I could take weekends off finally in my life. I could take weekends off.
Nice.
And that's when I got into, you know, hanging out with the Cave Research Foundation people. I became a joint venturer, AKA volunteer with CRF, started spending a lot of time down at Powder Mill, which it was an old visitor center on the Ozark National Scenic Riverways that the government had decommissioned. So Cave Research Foundation took it over because they had an apartment upstairs with two bedrooms. We put a bunch of bunk beds in there, had a kitchen, had a nice living room, had a nice deck and a garage down below, storage, washing machine and dryer, places for the computers. So it was a great research center. And the flood of 2017, unfortunately, flooded the whole thing up to the second level. And it is now a flat piece of land, but the flooding in 2017 was catastrophic pretty much across the board.
Wow.
So it obliterated our research center, unfortunately, but we still continued to do work with the Ozark National Scenic Riverways, the Mark Twain National Forest, the LAD, which is the Leo A. Dry Foundation, and the Pioneer Forest. They own hundreds of thousands of acres in the Ozarks in Missouri, and they have a lot of caves on their property. So all of these entities like to know what they have on their property, and they also like to have maps of them. They like to have photographs of what they have, bioinventories. So we were then and are now kept really busy with the entities that we work with. I have since become a fellow in the CRF, so that's exciting to be recognized for my contributions to the caving community.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's so
very
cool.
Very proud of that. Yeah. 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 I think so. So, Scott House, he was the president of the Cave Research Foundation at the time. He's now the Ozarks manager. And so Scott House is another big regional caving name that you may or may not have heard, but he's become a good friend of mine over the years and spent a lot of time underground with him as well. So fast forward to 2009, I actually got hired at a shuttle company at Lambert Airport. And it just so happened that my boss was a caver.
It almost never happens that way when you meet a caver randomly.
I did not know it going into the interview. We got to talking about it, and he's like, "Oh, well, I'm a caver too." And I'm like, "Well, I'm a caver too." And I got hired for the job, and he said, "You know, the biggest reason why I hired you is because your resume was on recycled paper."
There was
print on the other side of the paper. So I literally, you know, took the blank side of a bunch of random pieces of paper and put my resume on it. And he said that and being a caver and was, you know, two of the main reasons why he hired me. And I'm like, well, okay, I guess that's a good thing.
Right on.
So that rekindled the fire again, being that my boss was a caver, and, you know, we went on caving trips quite a bit, and that went on for a while. Actually, when I got hired, I did ask for some certain time off because I had a Bighorns mountain trip in Wyoming scheduled with Ben Miller and Bob Lurch, Dr. Bob Lurch, who is another well-known caver. He used to be a soil scientist at Missouri State University. University of Missouri in Columbia, Missouri. So we had this trip planned to go to Peabar Cave, which is way up in the Bighorn Mountains of Wyoming. So went there, did that, had an amazing experience there. Probably that's one of my top caving trips is the Wyoming trip. Peabar Cave is way up in the Madison Formation next to Little Medicine Lodge Creek, I believe. So just a spectacular trip, spectacular scenery, spectacular experience. Definitely will go down in the top tier of my experiences.
And I guess it's all of those things together that made it the top tier experience, or was it the cave trip itself? What can you point to be able to say that about it?
That was my first extended out of state trip. I had never been to the Bighorn Mountains. I'd never been to Wyoming. Had always enjoyed hanging out with both Ben and Bob. Super cool guys who I've spent a lot of time underground and above ground with. Just, you know, really good friends.
Yeah.
So, and the trip was flawless until we were heading back and the left driver's side wheel flew off as we were heading down the highway.
No.
Maybe that was a near-death experience. I've lost track. Could maybe that be. Was another near-death experience.
Good heavens.
So, yes, we were in the Wind River Gorge, I think, and Ben was driving, I was in the back of the cab, and Ben was like, something's going on, the steering wheel's shaking real bad, and then all of a sudden something shifted and we saw the wheel bouncing ahead of us going into the other lane of traffic. We were like, oh no. Luckily nobody got hurt. We got to spend a couple nights in Thermopolis, which was amazing, which we wouldn't have done had this mishap not happened. So Thermopolis is an amazing, amazing place. If you've never been there, I would highly recommend it. So,
Okay. Hot Springs. Is that, I'm just yes, taking yes. from the name. I have not heard of it myself.
Yes. Thermopolis, Wyoming, a lot of hot springs, and yeah, just it was overall a really cool experience, you know, maybe not for all the right reasons, but we live to tell the story and it makes for a good story. So.
That's awesome. It does.
Yeah. Also in 2009, I was lucky enough or crazy enough to spend a week in Carroll Cave, which at the time was Missouri's longest cave. So I actually initially went in thinking I was going to be in there for 3 days. I went in with a photo documentation team, and that included Rick Hines, who is a very well-known cave photographer and Kansas City Area Grotto, KCAG member. And I was with him and his son, Chad, and Jamie Euless, and another name that I can't remember right now. But anyway, we went in and spent 3 days taking, you know, really, really great photos, which Rick is known for. And then on the way out on day 3 or 4, I forget what it was, we actually passed another team, which included Bob Lurch and Ben Miller and a few others who I can't, oh, Amber Spawn. Can't remember the others. Doesn't matter. So I made a snap decision right there and then. I'm like, you know what? I have enough food. I have enough gear. I'm just going to abandon the photo team and join the survey team. And that's exactly what I did. Completely unplanned. 2 hours, probably more than 2 hours into the cave travel time. And I did. I spent 6 days in Carroll, half with the photographic team and half with the survey team. It was an absolutely, again, another epic trip. I actually wrote a story about it called 6 Days with Carroll. It was published in the NSS, which is cool. Was sad to leave. You know, it was like a lot of people ask me, man, I bet you were ready to get out of there. And I'm like, you know, actually I could have stayed a little while longer. I was sad to be leaving.
Oh man. Yeah. So often I'll be, you know, a few hours in and I'll just be like, I just want to see sunlight again. And to be under there for several days and to not want to leave, that had to have been it sounds like a significantly pleasurable experience, I guess, if that were the case.
I would call it a life altering experience. Yes.
Man.
And unfortunately I don't know which issue of NSS News my story is in, but If you can find it, it's called 6 Days with Carroll, and it's a good read.
I'll have to dig it up.
And so Carroll Cave, which at the time was the state's longest cave at 21 miles. So it's an absolutely stunning cave. One that they actually drilled a separate entrance in. They drilled a 92-foot shaft on top of this mountain because the natural entrance was not available to cavers to enter. So they drill a hole.
There you go. We'll yep. get in somehow.
Yeah, exactly. We now get in through this shaft with a ladder and on rope. And it's actually come a long way. The Carroll Cave Conservancy, which was in charge of everything Carroll Cave, has now been dissolved and kind of incorporated into the Missouri Caves and Karst Conservancy, MCKC. So there's some new players and a lot of the old players, Rick Hines being one of them. But that kind of leads into a story about a woman that I met at Carroll Cave one time on, you know, just an adventure going on a trip. Her name was Pick Walenta. And at the time she was dating Jim Cooley, who is also a very well-known name in regional Ozarks caving, particularly for cave gating. He has gated a lot of caves and I've gated a lot of caves with him. But Pick and I fell into one each other immediately. We were like immediately best friends. And we were pretty much inseparable after that. We would go on trips all the time. She owned her own business, so she could get away whenever she wanted to, basically.
And there you go.
She just became my best running buddy and actually became president of the Kansas City Area Grotto. Breathed new life into possibly a floundering grotto, and she just went above and beyond in making Kansas City Area Grotto a shining star and increasing membership and doing all kinds of trips and outreach and everything. So she was amazing. Did a lot of gating projects with her, did a lot of river trips with her and Jim Cooley and Ken Grush, who is one of the major keepers of the cave files in Missouri, and many others who it'd take a long time to name. Fast forward to 2019, I was no longer working at the shuttle company because Uber and Lyft pretty much put them out of business.
Mm, yeah.
And I actually applied for a job at the Lambert Airport Police Department as a dispatcher because I had been a dispatcher at the shuttle company. So turns out it was a fairly good fit. So I am still employed with the Lambert Airport Police Department. And instead of having Sundays and Mondays off like I did at the shuttle company, I now have weekends off again.
Hooray!
Yay! Yeah. So I rejoined Merrimack Valley Grotto, which is another very well-known St. Louis grotto. I had been a member way back when. So rejoined and, you know, hanging out with the MVG folks again, which is good. In fact, I hung out with a lot of MVG folks at Mammoth Cave this past weekend. There's quite a good Missouri contingency that has been showing up for the project weekends at Mammoth. So that's really cool.
Awesome.
So 2020, I was on vacation in the Dominican Republic with my dearest friend, Pick, and also another bestie of ours, Kathy Bovard, in Rick Hines' villa. He actually has a villa in the Dominican Republic that he invites cavers down to on the reg, all, you know, at least once a year. So
for caving?
No, there is some caving in the Dominican Republic. Unfortunately, I didn't get to go caving, and I'll explain why later. But next time I go to DR, I'm going to do some caving, hopefully. So I get to DR a day after Kathy and Pick and Rick arrived because I went to see the band New Order in Miami.
Really?
Yes.
New Order in Miami. Wow.
Yes. Yes. I'm a big concert guy. I love seeing concerts. So there was a progression of us being in Tampa, visiting another caver friend of ours, and then they flew out. I went down to Miami, saw the concert, and then flew down to the Dominican Republic. Unfortunately, the night that I got there, our dear friend Pick had an aneurysm, and she did not make it out of the Dominican Republic alive. So really? It was a devastating blow. And, you know, we thought she was going to make it. It seemed like she was on the rebound, was going to be okay. And she did not. So,
oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. It was rough. So that was January 24th of 2020.
Oh my God.
And continuing with her legacy, in between the time that she was hospitalized and the time that she passed away, I initiated a GoFundMe campaign to raise money to get her back to the United States, because she would still be probably in some kind of medical condition and would have to be specially flown. So we raised about 10 grand for her.
Wow.
And getting her back to the States. So this $10,000 that we had, Pick's family offered to return it to whoever wanted their money back. You know, they're like, we'll give everybody their money back. If you want to transfer the contribution to something in Pick's honor, which I had already kind of made up in my head that we should do some kind of Pick Memorial Campground at Carroll Cave.
Yeah.
So very little of that money was actually asked to be given back. We transferred all of this money to Kansas City Area Grotto so that they could actually build a Pick Walenta Memorial Campground at Carroll Cave.
That's wonderful.
It's absolutely wonderful. And in addition to that, Springfield Plateau Grotto, which is in Springfield, Missouri, donated $1,000 from a gear sale, a gear swap sale that they had. So that was, you know, the caving community, not only in the Ozarks, but Pick's family and friends actually rallied together to contribute these funds to make her legacy happen. And I believe that last weekend, while we were in Mammoth, Rick Hines went to the site and actually installed the roof on the pavilion that is built for Pick. We've planted trees there. We've laid cobble for paths, and it's really starting to come together. Unfortunately, I haven't been there in a while. Again, another one of the things that I need to get to.
Don't we all have that list?
Yeah, it's on the list that Indiana is on as well. So so that's that. Some of the big projects that I've been involved in that I'm really proud of. One of them is called Cloud Nine.
I've heard of Cloud Nine.
Cloud Nine is an ATV recreation membership only club that is huge. I believe they have 6,000 acres, 6,200 acres, something like that. And it's absolutely gorgeous. And a gentleman named Lee Kraut, who is also a Kansas City Area Grotto member, is a member of Cloud Nine and initiated communication with KCAG members to come down and inventory, ridge walk, document, map, bioinventory all of the caves on the property. I don't remember how many caves they thought they had, but now I think the last count is 35 caves on the property.
Whoa.
Two of which are significant. So we're still spending time down there, but we started in 2013 and pretty much finished surveying and photographing and doing all the bioinventory of all of their caves. We're supposed to be authoring a book for the club of the caves, you know, on the property, and maps of the caves, so that, you know, they know what they have. And in case any of their members get lost in any of these caves, they have the maps and they know all of that stuff.
So, sure.
A lot of cool stuff going on there. I was big part of that, which I'm very proud of. Another big project that I've been involved in is called Fogle Pole Cave in Illinois. Just across the river from where I live in South St. Louis is Monroe County, Illinois, which is a huge sinkhole plain that has several large caves on it. And Fogle Pole Cave has been acquired by the, I believe it's the Paul Whiteman Nature Preserve. And COVID closed that project down for a while, but it's now recently been reopened, I've heard from Aaron Addison. So that's exciting. That's another huge cave that I'm proud to have my name on. Another one called Alley Spring Cave, which is a multi-mile cave that was kind of stumbled across while down in Powder Mill at the research center. Ken Grush was down there, and he was actually approached by a gentleman who came into the research center, and they got to talking, and Bruce Archambault actually said, oh yeah, I've got a couple of caves on my property. You should come check them out. So we did. And Alley Spring ended up being over 2 miles long. We still Whoa. Haven't finished it, but giant cave. I would like to think that I took the very first shot and I'm going to take the very last shot. So
you never know when the last shot is though.
You never know. But I mean that where we're at with the survey back there is over a 2 hour travel time. So we're hoping to get it finished this spring at MVOR, which is Mississippi Valley Ozark region. PBAR, which I mentioned out in Wyoming, was another project that I'm very proud to have been a part of. You'll probably remember when you interviewed Chad McCain that he mentioned Black Fathom River Cave.
Oh, yeah.
Yep,
amazing place.
Amazing place. Very proud to have been a part of that. I did send you a picture of the connection team the day that we made that connection. That was a highlight. That was an awesome, awesome time. Awesome day. Awesome trip. Super cool guys. I've been involved in mapping Crevice Cave, which is the longest cave in Missouri. Wind Tunnel down in Arkansas, Stone County, Arkansas. There's a gigantic system called Wind Tunnel. Bob Lurch, Ben Miller, and I, and a lot of other Missouri cavers and Arkansas cavers convene down there frequently. There's also a place called Flittering Pit and Janus, which are connected, but Janus is also another huge system that I need to get back in there. And of course, Mammoth Cave, very proud to finally say that I've been in the world's longest cave twice now.
You're a mammoth caver.
I am now a mammoth caver. You know, met a lot of cool people. Finally got to meet Holly McClintock, whom you interviewed as well.
Yeah.
She was really, really cool.
Did you go to Roppel?
I have been to Roppel, actually. 2 years ago, I went with Craig Downs and Krista Bartel, who's also another very prolific Missouri caver. She lives just north of Springfield. I think Holly did mention Krista in her interview, but definitely plan on going back. Have no reason not to go back. Love both Roppel and Mammoth. So yeah, we went in the Austin entrance last weekend and then ended up at the Mather section, went through Turner Hall with all of the gypsum formations and the gypsum flowers, and it was absolutely stunning, jaw-droppingly stunning. It was amazing. We are also currently mapping Onyx Cave in Eureka Springs, which is a tourist cave, which had an extremely small map, and the new owners did not know how much cave they had. So we have been going to the back part of the cave off the tourist trail and surveying all of that for them. And it's turned out to be a really cool cave as well. And probably, I don't know, 10 times what they had on the map originally. So that's cool. Hopefully the owner wants to start doing wild cave tours. So cool to be a part of that. And maybe when I move back down to Eureka Springs, I'll lead those guided cave tours. Who knows?
I always think it's interesting when, you know, an entity will buy a show cave and not really be cavers or know much about caving and be like, you know, there's probably more to this cave, right? Come on in.
Yeah.
Let's check it out. Like, it's right. Just, you know, I mean, a show cave is like any other business, you know, and they run it like a business, and the business interest is the part where people can go. But the rest, it seems, you know, not much is known about. Like, I think about going to Luray Caverns in Virginia, and it's like, yeah, the cave is amazing, but it's just this tiny little piece of a huge system that no one ever goes in anymore. At least it seemed like when I visited.
Yep, kind of like that. And I had visited Onyx Cave, you know, many, many years ago throughout the years. And as far as show caves go, it's okay. What they have beyond the tourist trail is the stuff to see. You know, I mean,
isn't that funny?
You know, beautiful gypsum flowers and beautiful formations and multiple waterfalls. And it's just beautiful back there. So again, Krista Bartel was in there last time with me late last year, along with Kayla Sepkota, who is now the current president of Cave Research Foundation. She's a very good longtime friend of mine. So there are so many people that I consider constituents and good friends of mine over the years. And, you know, that's just another thing that makes me proud and grateful to be a project caver in Missouri and beyond. And so much stuff, you know, not to brag or toot my own horn, but last I checked, there's about 150 maps with my name on it, which I think is super cool to have.
Toot away, you
know,
man.
Yeah. I, you know, Ben Miller and I used to joke that, you know, the only reason we're in this is so to see how many maps we can get our names on. Right.
So that's kind of become
that, you know, like 150 maps. That's a lot. And as I said before, I've caved in Missouri and Illinois and Tennessee and Kentucky and Oklahoma and Wyoming. Indiana is next. I assume that you're aware of Kirsten Alvey's Missouri Bat Census.
Yes, yeah, she talked to me about it.
Yes, so her Facebook page, Missouri Bat Census, requests to join that, and she posts all of her caving pictures on there.
Frequently, so yeah, is, and it's good stuff.
Absolutely. She takes amazing photographs in cave with her cell phone. So if anybody who's listening really wants to follow someone who meticulously documents their travels underground, join the Missouri Bat Census and watch the photos. Look for the photos. Also, another Facebook page called Missouri's Caves, Mines, and Rock Formations, of which I am an admin, and I try to, you know, post my stuff there as well as on my own personal page. But Kirsten also posts on that and a handful of other stuff. She plasters Facebook with her adventures, which is great. Kind of makes up for those of us who aren't as diligent about documenting our travels underground.
Well, so she's retired, so right?
Yes, she is. She has a lot of free time.
That kind of time. Yeah,
she does, and she's really, really good at the photography thing. She's got it down. It's absolutely amazing the stuff that she comes up with.
Yeah.
And so here we are. That's about all I got.
Well, but didn't something happen last year?
Oh, health-wise? Yes. Oh, yes. My near-death experience. Are we on number 4 or 5 now?
No, I think it's 4, but.
Okay, number 4. So, yes, thank you for reminding me. So, last March, I was in Eureka Springs. That's where my family lives now. That's where my mother lives. My mother's 93 years old. We were transitioning her into assisted living. While I was down there, I was kind of feeling a little off, you know, didn't know what it was concerned it might have been COVID, wasn't quite myself. And I left on April 10th, I believe, came home to St. Louis, took the back roads home as I usually do if I have time, you know, stopped in Eminence, Missouri, which any Missouri caver will know as the float trip capital of Missouri. Mm-hmm. It's not Steelville, it's Eminence. And
don't at me.
Yeah. And stopped at the Dairy Shack, which a lot of people will recognize, and got some ice cream and just felt like crap. Had a sore throat, had a headache, got home, same thing, Sunday night, got home, felt like crap. Monday morning, got up, my headache was worse. Called in to work sick. Don't remember much of Monday. Tuesday, called in sick to work. Don't remember much of Tuesday either. My head was aching.
Oh my gosh.
And a weird thing about that is that one of the last things that Pick said to me when she was alive is, I have the worst effing headache I have ever had in my life. Why I didn't pick up on the fact that something might be seriously wrong with me and to call the ambulance immediately, I do not know. I wasn't thinking straight. I was not thinking properly, correctly. Wednesday, called in sick to work again. Don't remember any of Wednesday. Apparently, I called our payroll clerk here at the Lambert Airport Police Department. And at some point, as she relays it to me, I said, oh my God, I have never been this sick. I have to call you back. Don't remember any of this again. Fast forward, who knows how long, because I don't remember any of it. I am talking to my next door neighbor in my backyard. At some point, my next door neighbor sees me faceplant onto my back concrete patio.
Oh my God.
calls the ambulance and was carted off to SSM Hospital, SLU Hospital here in St. Louis. And apparently I was found underneath my stairs to my back porch, and my face was all bloody and I had scars and scrapes everywhere because apparently I had had a seizure and I was seizing and flailing all about. When the ambulance got there, apparently I came to enough to start punching and kicking and shucking and jiving and cussing.
Wow.
So, yes, apparently they had to put me down with fentanyl is what I read in my reports.
And seizures are not a normal thing for you?
No, okay. Not at all. Not at all. Don't think I've ever had a seizure in my life.
Except for that one.
Don't think I've ever had a 3-day period that I don't remember in my life.
Oh my gosh. What in the world?
What in the world? That's what the doctors were saying when I got to the hospital. So they thought that I had encephalitis, which is a swelling of the brain.
Yeah.
So they put me in an induced coma and intubated me, you know, put all the tubes and everything and put me in a coma. And I was in ICU, or I was in the emergency room for I don't know how long or how many days. They decided a few days later to wean me off of the drugs and to try to bring me out of the coma and see how I would react. I did not react well. Mm. At some point, I started shucking and jiving and kicking and punching and cussing and screaming again. So they're like, no, sir, you're going back down. They put me in another induced coma and intubated me again. April 16th is when I finally came to in an ICU room, and my sister from Arkansas was there. One of my best friends from Houston was there.
Oh my goodness.
Two of my best friends from St. Louis were there. My partner was there next to me holding my hand, and I just looked around and said, what the F are you all doing here? What am I doing here? What is going on? I slowly got my wits about me, and honestly, I felt the worst I have ever felt in my life as far as well-being and brain space and whatever. At one point, I told my sister, Tracy, I don't think I'm going to make it out of this hospital. That is how bad I felt.
Oh my goodness.
I thought I was going to die. And the doctors and nurses thought I was going to die too. In reading the reports, they stated on multiple occasions that mortality is almost imminent. So
wow.
they thought I was going to die. And I thought I was going to die. I thought I was dying. At one point, I remember going down for a nap. And I did see a gigantic white flash of light.
Oh man. Okay.
In with my eyes closed and in my dreams. But I obviously woke up, and you know, it was a slow recovery, but you know, I started eating a little bit and incrementally started feeling better and thought, okay, maybe I am gonna be okay. You know, and, you know, then I tried to get up and go to the bathroom and almost fell over because I was completely atrophied for having been lying down for 2 weeks straight. So I had to relearn how to walk.
Essentially.
I had PTSD, which I didn't know of at the time. I only figured that out basically when I got home and started crying at the drop of a hat. And I had, you know, traumatic brain injury. Memory was a little foggy, still is actually. You know, thought process was a little foggy. I just didn't feel right. So it was a very slow recovery, but I am here. And thanks to my wonderful partner who has been at my side the whole time, got to give a shout out to Clinton. He's been absolutely amazing to me.
So what was it that put you in the hospital last year?
The best thing that the doctors could come up with is something called acute encephalopathy.
Okay.
Which I had to say over and over about 1,000 times before I could get it right. Acute encephalopathy, which is basically when one's brain tries to rewire itself
What?
Typically, after a toxic event or a particularly traumatic event or like a car accident or some kind of brain injury type thing, of which I had none of, there was no toxic event. There was no major psychological event. There wasn't any of that. So basically, my brain tried to rewire itself without consulting with me first. And that ended up in the face plant.
Yeah.
I also had a small brain bleed. I also had a blood clot in my leg. And all of these things, whether they combined and joined forces to cause this, the doctors don't quite know. Maybe the face plant caused the brain bleed and or the blood clot. They just don't know. There are that many question marks.
There was nothing particularly stressful about moving your mother into assisted living or anything like that? No strife where that was concerned?
That is always stressful, but I don't remember it being that stressful.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I always think that cavers are really special people. You know, I mean, we do this thing that a lot of people would consider crazy. And I think that cavers in that way are a little hardier than a lot of people. So it wouldn't seem to me like that kind of stress would get to you that much, but I'm trying to connect the dots here, which I'm sure you've done over the last year as well.
Absolutely. And I don't believe that I have connected many, if any, dots. I don't think the doctors have either. You know, I had 273 pages of notes from when I was in the hospital for 10 days. And there's no conclusive reason that they can come up with on how or why I ended up the way I was.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness.
It's bizarre.
Thank goodness for Clinton, indeed, and thank goodness for all your friends and everybody who supported you through that.
Yes.
Wow.
I'm here to tell the story, thankfully, and I want to thank you, and I want to thank all of my family and my friends and my caving community and my caving family, and I want to give another shout out to Ben Miller, who's he's a dear, dear friend of mine. I was speaking with Spike Cruz, Jeffrey Cruz, a couple weeks ago on a little expedition that we were on, and he gave a really great story about what caving meant to him. And it was an amazing story, and it really got me thinking, you know, what does caving mean to me personally? Which a lot of people ask, and it's hard to narrow down, but caving is pretty much my church. I worship at the altar of Karst.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Caving means escape. It gives me a chance to defrag, regroup, gives me a chance to explore the unknown. The camaraderie that we experience is amazing, gives me a sense of accomplishment. I get to travel a lot. I'm into earthing. It gives me a chance to lay down in the dark on the dirt and just get some earthing in.
Yeah.
I see some amazing things. I see a lot of virgin caves still, and helps me keep in shape. Almost dying four times makes one take stock of everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also think I have that I have a connection to the Native American peoples in that I was born in Arapahoe County, Colorado. I moved to Dakota County, Minnesota. I bought a house on Osage Street in St. Louis, very close to Cherokee Cave. My family's home in Arkansas is on Arapahoe Drive, as is another piece of property that I own. So there is this string of Native American tribes that has run through my life since I was born, which is very cool.
That is cool.
I may be reincarnated from a Native American. I don't know.
Again, the church is the altar of Karst.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have a list of people that I want to thank who have, you know, graced my life and my decades of project caving. I'm just going to rattle off a bunch of names. And if I don't have your name on the list, I apologize, but I'm thinking about you. Bruce Stinchcomb, Adam Marty, Bob Lurch, Ben and Katie Miller, Scott and Patty House, Mick Sutton and Sue Hagen, Tex Yoakum, who is, you know, deceased, rest in peace, sir. Mark Fishbrooks, Kirsten Alvey Mudd, Mark Jones, Dennis Novicki, Krista Bartel, Kayla Sapkota, Rita Worden, Chad McCain, Ed Klausner, Elizabeth Miller, Craig Downs, Paul Hawk, Bill G, Jim Cooley, Ken Grush, Pick Walenta, Tony Schmidt, Dan Lamping, Joe Sikorski, Richard Young, Bob Osborne, Tommy Brucker, John Beard, Craig Williams, Spike Cruz, Gary Resch, Edmund Tucker, Brenda Goodnight, Tyler Skaggs, Jeff and Jill Fennell, Michael Walker, Keith Thompson, Derek Holtman, Lawrence Ireland, Matt Beeson, Nicole Ridlin, Brendan Van Dalsum, Aaron Addison. And I'd like to thank my family, especially my sister Tracy and her wife Susan, Jen Snyder, Cindy Green, Alex Lang, Clinton Hall, for being there in the hospital when I was questionably going to maybe be or not be in this world any longer. I would like to thank Merrimack Valley Grotto, Stygian Grotto, Middle Mississippi Valley Grotto, Southeast Missouri Grotto, Kansas City Area Grotto, Cave Research Foundation, Springfield Plateau Grotto, Illinois Speleological Survey, Illinois Karst Conservancy, Missouri Speleological Survey, Missouri Bat Census, and of course the NSS.
That's quite the list. I mean, and we've all got lists like that of our caving family and how it intersects with our personal life. And I want to come back to something that you said earlier in the interview, or I guess kind of a theme that we touched on in your personal life and how you kind of partied like there was no tomorrow because you weren't sure there was going to be a tomorrow. I've talked to a few cavers who, you know, some of whom are not that this is necessarily you, but some of whom who are like in recovery from substance abuse and things like that. And I want to go back to like your party days and try to figure out real quick where caving fits into that or where it maybe replaced that, because for so many people that I've talked to who are like in recovery, and again, not that that's you, but it's almost as if caving replaced that part of them. It's like a healthier indulgence, I guess.
I am not in recovery.
Sure.
You know, I still enjoy my my IPAs and, you know, whatever they're passing around at the campfire.
But for some, it's a problem, and it's not a problem for you. So it doesn't, it's not necessary, it's not a necessity for you to be away from it completely.
It is not. So did I replace some of that with caving? Probably not consciously, but probably unconsciously. And, you know, the passion was always there since I was nine, which is luckily before my partying career happened. But I would say that Project Caving probably replaced some of the energy that I was expending towards partying like a rock star, because one can only keep that kind of lifestyle up for so long before you either can't do it anymore, or you die, or you go into recovery. So, you know, I guess I'm somewhere in between with that, and that I would much rather go on a hard, long caving expedition than party like a rock star these days.
Absolutely.
I'm going to loop back to something that Kirsten said in her interview with you and her podcast. You had asked her, so what are you most looking forward to moving forward in your caving adventures?
Yeah.
And she mentioned a cave that she had gone through a water crawl with her intern and popped up into Virgin Borehole Cave.
Yeah.
And she said that that was what she was most looking forward to. Well, I was actually with Kirsten and her intern on that breakthrough trip, but I decided to stay behind on the other side of that water crawl because it was cold outside and I had on an insulated coveralls. And had I gone through that water crawl, I would have gained about 30 pounds with a wet insulated coverall. So
right.
I did not. We went back to resurvey all of that Virgin Borehole Passage. It was myself, Ben Miller, Joe Sikorski, Kirsten Alvey, Ben Miller, and myself. And Ben and I were in the middle of surveying this absolutely beautiful passage. And Ben said to me, he's like, hey man, I know you've had a really rough year, and I just want to say that it's really, really good to be with you here now.
Oh man.
And that was just the best thing that I could have heard, and something that I will remember for the rest of my life.
That's so sweet.
I value his friendship and everybody else's friendship. And again, I'm really glad to be alive and able to talk about it and share my story. You know what, folks, live your life like it's your last day and dance like your hair's on fire.
Yeah. What great advice. Sean, I'm so glad you're here. Wow.
Thank you. Thank
you. Against all odds, you are here talking to me right now.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
What a storied caving life and just life in general. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being so candid and sharing all of it. Not as if it's no big deal, but just being open enough to be this vulnerable and share all this adventure. If today is your last day, boy, you lived a life. I know it won't be, but wow.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Transparency is key. You know, I have nothing to hide. I lay it out all on the table and everybody can take it for what it's worth. And hopefully you got a chuckle and hopefully, you know, you can be energized if you're, you know, not caving much anymore and you don't really have a reason why. You know, maybe I'll inspire you to get out there and get underground and just do it, man. Just do it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Wow. Sean, thank you for being here and for everything that you've done for caving. And may there be many, many more trips in the future. I hope I can go on one with you. Wasn't that great? Sean Williams on the Caving Podcast. I don't know who I've got next month. I don't know. Depending on how many interviews I get at Sarah this weekend, it might be one of those. I got a couple other ones in the can that I might break out. Who knows? That's kind of fun, right? That June will be a surprise. Be back on June 1st. Thanks to our sponsor, Sophie Reapdress. Get a cave suit from sophiereapdress.com. Link in the description of the podcast. Come to Capers. Come to Spelio Fest. Come to Sarah this weekend. And thanks to our past sponsors as well. Swago at swagogear.com. Organic Robot Designs in Greenfield, Indiana. If you need a t-shirt for your grotto, that'd be a good fundraiser, right? Hit Charlie up. He's the former chairman of my grotto. Also, El Spelio Lights, currently being sold by On Rope One. And I do believe that is all. Have a great May. And until next time, kill nothing but time.